The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Discrimination is not tolerated in Texas. No business should be discriminated against simply because its owners gave to a church or to the Salvation Army or to any other religious organization. No business should lose a government contract because of their religious beliefs. The Save Chick-fil-A legislation that I'm about to sign is a victory for religious freedom in Texas.
That's Texas Governor Greg Abbott speaking before signing a bill, Save Chick-fil-A, into law earlier this summer. Chick-fil-A, besides serving delicious chicken sandwiches, has a reputation. Some people believe it's earned, but it's a reputation among the progressive wing in the United States for being a restaurant chain that also serves up hate. Now, if you go there, you're going to be treated very, very kindly, but they're talking not about the service. They're talking about the beliefs of the owners of Chick-fil-A. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, August the 29th. Terry Mattingly is going to join us here in the first half hour of the program. We're going to talk about Chick-fil-A, Snopes, and the Babylon Bee. A little bit later, a story of adoption and reconciliation from Mary Cruda, the mother of 5 children, 16 grandchildren, and 3 great-grandchildren, and Deaconess Rose Adel, a pastor's wife and mother of 6 children. They'll join us for the latter part of the program to hear that story. Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate in the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Some might wonder, and we couldn't blame them, how in the world these three things come together, Chick-fil-A, Snopes, and the Babylon Bee.
Well, and you left Popeyes out of there, too.
Oh, that's right.
Popeye's chicken. I mean, right now, you know, with the whole controversy about, is it a denial of God's holy word to eat chicken sandwiches at Popeye's, you know, instead of Chick-fil-A? No, this whole thing has turned into a matter of sarcasm, satire, and humor. But at the same time, there are some very serious issues looming in the background in an age when the most powerful websites are trying to decide what constitutes hate speech, what they can print on their sides that make their particular readers angry and upset, which is maybe not the same, different people define hate speech different ways. And in the midst of all that, we've ended up with this incredible flashpoint, which is the Babylon Bee and its attempt to be a Christian worldview site that does cultural, religious, and political satire. Then, meanwhile, we have the ongoing wars over Chick-fil-A, which, of course, you're going to have written about at the Babylon Bee. So now then the whole thing begins to cycle. I could give you all kinds of examples about the complexity of this, but suffice it to say, there's 2 or 3 different phenomena going on when you get involved with Snopes.com and the other fact-checking watchdog groups. Problem number one, there are gullible people out there who have a tendency to want to believe things that would appear to reinforce their beliefs they already have. This is true on the left as well as the right. I guess if I was going to give you an example on the left, it would be the fact that a lot of people to this day, if you walk up and say, what did Sarah Palin say about Russia and Alaska? A very large percentage of people will say, oh, Sarah Palin said that she had experience in foreign policy because she could see Russia from her porch. Now, the problem is that that isn't what Sarah Palin said. That's what she was satirically said to have said on Saturday Night Live. But a lot of people who wanted to believe the worst about Sarah Palin came to believe that she actually said that. Now, do you remember what Sarah Palin actually said? I'm going to give you a test here.
Actually, no. I mean, I can remember the Tina Fey bit, but I can't remember what Governor Palin actually said.
Well, what she pointed out was that before being governor, she was on the Alaska Energy, Oil and Energy Commission, and they were frequently involved in negotiations with the Russian government and with other similar groups because of the power of the oil and gas industry in Alaska. Then she noted that as governor of Alaska, she was involved in a lot of negotiations and things with Russia. And what she said was, you can see Russia from some of the islands in the Aleutians off the Alaskan coast. That's how close we are to each other. Now, if all you do is say, I can see Russia from my porch, which isn't what she said, but it is awfully funny. But then you also strip away the actual content, which was, as governor of Alaska, I've had a lot of dealings with Russia in terms of business, environment, trade, and a bunch of other stuff. At that point, Palin isn't funny anymore. She sounds like someone explaining her view of a political position. Well, satire always takes things that are to some degree true and then turns them into something that is hilariously not true. But I've interviewed the publisher of the Babylon Bee this week, Seth Dillon, and he said the very best satire is when you read it and you stop for a second and go, wait a minute, is that true or not? And you end up having to think about it, and you end up thinking about the fact that the world has gone so crazy in the Donald Trump era. Don't you? Isn't there something that you hear like at least once a week and you go, okay, wait a minute, is that real? Did he really say that? Did he really roll his eyes and say, I'm the chosen one, or not? I mean, who knows what to believe these days? Which led to the ultimate B headline on this, which was reality criticized for not more clearly distinguishing itself from satire. And meanwhile, you have the Babylon Bee being fact-checked by Snopes.com when the Babylon Bee freely admits that they make it all up. It's not fake news, it's satire. But nobody, right now, the people in the big powers of digital world don't seem as worried about this phenomena when it involves The Onion or Comedy Central or Saturday Night Live. But they're all really worried about the Babylon Bee. And we can talk about some of the headlines that at the Bee that have caused problems. But Christians also, whether or not you like the Bee or not, or whether you like their humor about beer-drinking Calvinists with funny-looking beards, but you don't like their humor about Bernie Sanders, forget all that for a second. At some point, this comes into an issue of whether certain types of conservative publishers, maybe even something like Lutheran Public Radio, have the right to do whatever they want and be promoted on Facebook. Or, I don't know this, so I'll ask you this. I don't know the answer to this question, which may be risky. How much work does Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio do that involves Facebook?
Well, from time to time, a lot. And I would say it's not as significant a presence as people might suppose, but it's something that we pay attention to on a regular basis.
Yeah, but it would affect your audience and your ability to reach your audience and grow your audience if all of a sudden Facebook decided you're no longer worthy of being allowed to freely circulate on Facebook. Or what if they demanded that Lutheran Public Radio declare itself to be a political group?
That would be a problem.
That would be a problem. And that's part of what's happening with the battles between the Babylon Bee and some of the elite digital powers that be. Now, that was real confusing, and it was real confusing because the whole situation is real confusing.
So we're dealing with two kind of online entities that ought to be able to coexist with one another without any confusion. An openly, admittedly satirical site that comes from a Christian conservative perspective, so to speak, and Snopes and the other fact-checking online services, which says we're just about the facts. We just say yay or nay to certain claims made in the media, whether it be traditional media or digital media. Why can't Snopes just acknowledge the fact that the Babylon Bee has an audience? Yes, some of the stuff does get misshared as real, but that's Bee's fault.
But it's the Babylon Bee's fault for having created that material in the first place. See, at one point you had Snopes, in effect, I forget what the precise words were, but you had Snopes considering The Onion is a humor site, and The Bee is a satire site. What would you see as the difference between The Onion and the Babylon Bee? And don't forget that before that, satire is now the better word. For a while, some of the fact checkers and Snopes were actually saying that the Babylon Bee was a fake news site. And, of course, fake news is a huge bombshell of a word term to throw around these days in the Trump era, at which point the B people say, we are 100% fake. That's kind of the point. I mean, we don't have any actual news on our site at all. We're making fun of the news by exaggerating it and doing fake versions of it, which is exactly what The Onion does. And it's kind of intriguing. You know, they're supposed to be really clear with how they label themselves, and I would agree with that, by the way. And the people at The Bee call themselves your trusted source for Christian news satire. The motto of The Onion is America's finest news source, with no word satire at all. But, of course, they're being satirical by calling themselves America's finest news source. That's a satirical statement. But if we're talking about labeling, what do people actually want the Bee to do? One of the huge problems here is you have the people who are gullible enough to fall for stuff and think it's real. Then you have people of malicious intent, both on the left and the right. There are a lot of conservatives, for example, who keep sending Babylon Bee items to Snopes because they enjoy the ludicrousy of Snopes trying to fact-check a pretend news site. And they think that's hilarious, but it still adds to the problem. Then you have people on the left and some on the right for different motives who actually take items out of the Bee, take the words and the images completely out of the context of the Bee, illegally violating copyright, put them into other messages and send them out like they're real. Without the word satire above the headline, or, you know, America's number one Christian news satire site, without the Bee graphics that says this is from the Babylon Bee, and we all know what that is, there are people who just seem to get their jollies by taking this stuff, putting it on Facebook and elsewhere, and pretending it's real, which in many ways is even more harmful in the way it's presented than people who accidentally put it out because they can't tell the difference. There are people with evil intent with some of this material. The question is, how in the world is the Babylon Bee supposed to stop that? There's a quote in my column this week where Dylan said, you know, we could write, "This is satire," above the headline. In the middle of the article, we could say, "Don't forget that you're reading satire." And at the end, we could say, "Warning, you have been reading satire." But would that stop people from messing up our stuff? Would that prevent people from taking that same article and removing the warnings that it's satire and putting it out like it's real? No. That's what a lot of people are doing now. The question is, how do you blame the Bee for what those people are doing? Or how do you blame the Onion for when people do things like that? Or how do you blame Saturday Night Live when someone puts out a kind of an alleged story based on a Saturday Night Live skit as if it was real? This is the internet. It is the Wild West at this point. We don't have clear laws yet about copyright. We don't have clear laws about what happens when someone, this is going to be confusing, so hang on. We don't have clear laws about what happens when someone chooses to satirize a satire site by pretending that the satire is real. We don't know what to do when people want to satirize a satire site by pretending that its satire is real. Because, see, satire has protected constitutional rights. The Supreme Court has already said that. So you might be able to do just about anything you wanted to do to mock the Bee, and it's legal as satire, even though you're trying to shut the Bee down from being a satire site. I'm really sorry. I feel like we're caught in, oh, I know what this is. My all-time favorite Babylon Bee headline and story is actually one about worship. They love to make fun of the worship wars and worship leaders. That's personally my favorite type of humor they do. Do you remember this one? It's a couple of years old, but it's my all-time favorite headline. Worship leader caught in infinity loop between bridge and chorus.
I remember it.
And the story is this guy is playing "How Great Is Our God," and he's leading worship, and they played the chorus so many times that he got sucked into what the Bee called the perpetual chorus bridge vortex and had to be rushed to the hospital because he couldn't stop playing like E minor 7, A minor 7. You know, he got caught in the loop. So anyway, that's neither here nor there. But sometimes when you start thinking about what is satire, what isn't, what's valid satire, what are the rules, the editorial rules for valid satire? My experience is that good satire is when you're satirizing stuff that you want to laugh at. Bad satire is when someone else satirizes something that you don't want people to laugh at, which brings us back to politics. So kick this ball down further down the road. What next?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about Chick-fil-A, Snopes, and the Babylon Bee. Should journalists be leaning on fact-checking organizations like Snopes for their own fact-checking? We'll get his answer to that after this.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press. Saving Western civilization, one student at a time.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you dread going to work out?
Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Chick-fil-A, Snopes, and the Babylon Bee. Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. So, Terry, we were talking about Snopes. It's a fact-checking website, and a lot of people depend on it. A lot of journalists depend on it, too. Should a journalist lean on a fact-checking website for his own fact-checking?
I think at this point they are a useful service that is one half of a debate about some of the issues in our culture today. In other words, I would not go with Snopes alone. But I would certainly check them specifically on the sort of stuff they used to do for a long time. They were really good at kind of urban legend type stuff. And I think on some political statements, they lean left, but it's a good place to go and find out what the actual transcript said. You see what I'm saying? You can use them as a source material, for some of these things, but it's best to retain some skepticism about them. So, yeah, I think they're useful. I think there are conservative sites that do similar work. I think they're useful, but I would never go to just one of those, independent of all the others, and just let it settle for that.
Is part of the problem, when we've talked about this before, in the day when you picked up a newspaper, you had pages, sections, and headings over those sections that told you mm-hmm. where you were yeah. in the newspaper's service, so to speak. You had news, you had sports news, you had op-ed, you had opinion letters to the editor. And in the digital age, it's much more difficult to sort that stuff out because you don't have sections or pages anymore. Should there be some kind of indicator, and would it kill satire to say satire, satire, satire at the top of the page?
Well, I think that there should be clear graphics and clear labeling. But the problem is that in the digital world, you can cut the material right out of that and send it out fake in another form. I mean, nobody used to take political cartoons and put them out and have people think they were real. But now we have digitally created images where the line between what's real and what is a created illusion is so thin that you can create the image for humorous intent and then put it in an article at a website that's clearly marked as satire. But this happens to the Bee now all the time. What happens if someone cuts the image completely out of that context and puts it out like it was real? What percentage of the American people is now skilled enough in detecting digital fakery, deep fakes, and now this is going to start going into video? They're getting now to where they can put other people's faces on other people's bodies and pretty much have them saying or doing whatever the world you want them to do. Some percentage of the population is going to fall for that. My wife is a computer-based reference librarian, and she's been saying, gosh, almost as long as I've known her, that we are headed to some kind of definitive court case that tries to establish what copyright is on the internet. But see, we already have a Supreme Court case that says you can take images and make fun of them for artistic and humorous purposes, and that's called satire. So, I mean, here we are. We're back into the satire infinity loop.
One of the things I've noticed when it comes to fact-checking, it's become really popular in the age of Trump. I remember his most recent State of the Union address. Virtually every left-leaning journalist on Twitter said, I will be live tweeting my fact-checking of President Trump during his State of the Union address. And I honestly just don't recall them doing that during the Obama administration. And to me, it kind of says, when is it important to fact-check and when is it not important to fact-check as a journalist?
Well, which one is a former accredited law school professor? And which one is a television talk show host who his whole career has been drug into court over and over and over and over for lying? So that's to say, as the Babylon Bee publisher told me, Trump offers an awful lot of low-hanging fruit in terms of the ability to grab this stuff and to make satire. But how do you make a satirical remark about Trump? It's almost hard to satirize him because he's so far out there on the edge to start with. The situation with Chick-fil-A is kind of getting there as well. I'm beginning to read stories about Chick-fil-A where you have people saying things like, we must pull Chick-fil-A off our university campus because people are beginning to have breakdowns and feel scared and worry about their safety. Now, is that a real quote or satire?
Well, I'm looking at a story involving Kansas University, and it's a reputable story from the Kansas City Star, where in the headline, Chick-fil-A is called a bastion of bigotry, and one of the individuals on that campus says it does violate the student and faculty's sense of safety.
Yeah. So, how would you satirize that statement? I don't know how you would. I mean, it's to some people, it's tragic that the word safety and danger are being used in these sort of ways. In others, it's laugh to keep from crying funny. But how would you? I mean, you can push these things pretty far. My column opened with an essay that ran the other day in The New Yorker. Now, The New Yorker, of course, is about as prestigious a content source as we have in America. And that's the one you were referring to earlier. The headline was Chick-fil-A introduces new hate sauce. Customers across the country who turned out for Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day were in for a surprise as the chicken restaurant chose today to launch a new product, hate sauce. Delighted customers mobbed the restaurants to try the zesty new sauce, with many chicken fanciers ordering their sandwiches with extra hate. It's so spicy, it makes your mouth feel like it's on fire, like a gay couple in hell, said Harlan Dorenson. Okay, now that's pretty far over the edge. That sounds like satire, sounds like pretty mean satire, and you kind of know where the writer's coming from. But when the Babylon Bee came out with a headline that said, House Democrats draft legislation that would make it a hate crime to eat at Chick-fil-A, is that satire or real? It's satire. But can you imagine that someone would read that and say, there they go again? I mean, it sounds like something that somewhere in some state government, there might be people who would do that, right? Because of this age we live in. Now, here's a B headline that goes totally out there, and plus it's making fun of Trump, which means nobody gets upset about it. This headline I like: Trump announces he was born of a virgin and will bring balance to the force. Now, that's obviously satire. But if you had done a satirical headline and printed what he actually said, separate from him claiming that he was rolling his eyes at the time, which now we have people doing digital analysis of whether the president was actually rolling his eyes, or did he roll them enough to have editorial intent? What a country. I could go on and on with this, but the Bee is in an interesting position that it's getting harder to tell what's real and what's not in the Trump age. They recently had a headline that made some people, now they're getting a lot of grief because of their humor about Congresswoman Omar. And they had a recent headline that said, Ilhan Omar withdraws support from bill to save the earth after learning that's where Israel is. Now, that's pretty mean, but it's satire, right? I mean, and she has said some pretty wild things. So what makes that invalid satire compared to the Sarah Palin front porch story? No, she didn't actually say this, but she said, you know, she has said some other things about Israel that are pretty radical. Do you see what the point I'm making about whether or not we approve satire based on whether it's mocking someone that we want to see mocked? In a way, that's an extension of this whole tense journalistic age that we live in right now, where everybody's consuming media that basically only tells them what they want to hear. I don't know when that stops.
What's the relationship, the proper relationship between straight journalism and satire? They coexist together, and satire, the power of satire is that it almost could be true. So what's the relationship?
Well, it's been here forever. There are parts of Shakespeare that are satire of the acts of kings and queens. Mark Twain, does that ring a bell? I mean, satire has been with us for a long, long time in terms of making fun of politicians. I think the new element here is the ability to fake satire and drag it out of context online in ways that we couldn't do before with even TV, radio, and whatever. So, as with so many other things right now, the internet has taken certain types of divisive behavior and rhetoric and turned the burner up under it even higher because it's so hard to control what happens on the net and what doesn't. I don't know how the bee can stop people from misusing their material, and thus this argument will continue.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
When we come back from this break on this Thursday afternoon, August the 29th, we're going to hear a story of adoption and reconciliation, a story that was secret to only a very, very few. In fact, well, just a handful of people for 43 years. And Mary Kruder will tell us that story of hers herself. We'll also be joined by Deaconess Rose Adel. So a story of adoption and reconciliation for the remainder of Issues Etc. You will want to stay tuned. Trust me. If you appreciate Issues Etc., Talk Radio for the Thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the World, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
The Lord has gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. These gifts can be received every week at both Grace Lutheran Church and Trinity Lutheran Church in Wichita, Kansas. Join us for divine services at Grace on Sundays at 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., as well as every Wednesday at 11 a.m., or at Trinity every Sunday at 11 a.m. Grace is located at 3310 East Pawnee and Trinity at 611 South Erie. Gather with us around our Lord and His giving His gifts to us. See you soon.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Discover a truly Lutheran approach to education. Concordia University Chicago's Center for the Advancement of Lutheran Liberal Arts supports a vibrant, growing community of classical educators. Whether you're a teacher, administrator, parent, or homeschooler, we have the resources and contacts you need to start a child's journey into the Lutheran liberal arts. Visit cuchicago.edu/calla. That's C-A-L-L-A.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is the new Growing in Faith Bible. It's written for children, grandchildren, and godchildren, ages 8 through 10. The Growing in Faith Bible contains more than 100 Bible stories with beautiful, engaging pictures. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Growing in Faith Bible, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August.